You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Microsoft Teams is helping a bicycle company reinvent the way that they work.
We make bicycles for everyday riders. Once the pandemic hit, we started doing virtual visits.
All of a sudden, we could open up our showroom to customers around the world.
Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. Today we're going to be making our fantasy picks for the UFC 201 main card here. Before we get going, just a reminder that we're kind of starting out still with this MMA podcast, so if you happen to be listening on iTunes or Stitcher, go ahead and please just take a second to rate and review the podcast. We really appreciate it. We'll even commentate your next backyard wrestling match, whatever it takes here. We'd be happy to help, or get at us on Twitter with any feedback here. But John, lots been happening in MMA since we last spoke. Of course, we've got PED use with the Lesnar positive test, the Chad Mendes suspension, Holly Holm, who was once on top of the world, lost another fight, Darian Caldwell, one of the better Bellator fighters, he got a big time upset. We got the Cyborg Santos fractured skull. I saw today he had a 7-hour surgery. Out of all that, or anything else that's happened since 200, what story jumps out at you the most?
Well, you know, I guess you would have to think it's probably the Lesnar news, simply because of the level of Brock's fame with mainstream media, UFC, and WWE. But you're right. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of big news stories. The Darian Caldwell upset you mentioned, he was something like a minus 1,200 favorite. It was something insane. It was over 1,000.
Yeah. Haven't seen that since Rousey and Holly Holm.
Yeah, you'll see that, you know, 4 or 5 times, you know, ever, if you're a hardcore MMA fan. The Holly Holm thing is, you know, it's 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, she was champion of the world. You know, 4 or 5 months later, she's lost back-to-back fights. And she's 34 years old, and I would bet against her fighting for a title again. As crazy as that sounds at this point, I would, if I had to lay money on it, I would say she will not fight for a title again. And it's kind of gotten to the point where it doesn't look like, at least the way it's set up now, that we're ever going to, at least, unless something's going to have to change, put it that way, in order for us to see a Holly Holm Ronda Rousey rematch. Because how things are set now, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it would almost have to be Rousey coming back against Nunes and then winning and then getting Holm. But that's getting so far ahead of ourselves at this point. For the record, though, I got to give Holm credit for continuing to fight. She could have just sat around and waited on a Rousey rematch. But like you said, who knows when and if that'll ever happen. So good for her for fighting. A couple of tough breaks there. But nonetheless, you got to respect the game.
Yeah, it's and like I said, it's people, you know, fighters deserve credit for taking fights where they have nothing to gain. And that was the case with Holly. She had nothing to gain by taking that fight. It didn't work out. And now, you know, she's going to have to regroup. But the biggest story, I think it has to be the Brock Lesnar news. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chad Mendes story, to me, is crazy because that has been talked about. Nobody has talked about that at all. If you look around, you see no one talking about that, which is crazy to me. Chad Mendes got, I believe, was a 2-year suspension. Yep. for his positive test, and no one is talking about that because it just pales in comparison to how big of a star Brock is. And mm-hmm. Brock tested positive
twice,
for a pre-fight test, then his test the fight the night of the fight, he tested mm-hmm. positive for that. So I guess you would kind of have to say at this point, I guess I would be surprised if Brock ever fought again too, right? I mean, you have to say that. You know, God knows when this mm-hmm. when this plays through all the suspension, the suspension is announced and it goes through the Nevada State Athletic Commission and all that. I don't know. I would bet against Brock ever fighting in the UFC again. I think you have to at this point.
I agree. I think he'll take his $2.5 million purse and run. I mean, if he gets suspended 2 years, he'll be 41 by the time this is all said and done here. So, yeah, I wouldn't bet on him coming back again. It was fun while it lasted to see him, but a little bit tainted.
If he's not going to apply for another license again, there's no point in paying a fine or anything. Just suck, just take the penalty and move on. Who cares? Yep. It's not going to affect his WWE career at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. Of course, WWE, maybe just a little bit more lenient than USADA here. All right, but let's get on to the 201 card, the one that's coming up this Saturday from Atlanta. I mean, we originally had it was supposed to be two title fights, the welterweight championship and a flyweight championship. Mighty Mouse got hurt, so that flyweight championship got knocked from the co-main event here. But let's get going with the main event. It's a welterweight champion. You've got champion Robbie Lawler going up against Tyrone Woodley, the challenger. On DraftKings, Lawler is 10,600. Woodley is 9,000. So you get Woodley at a significant discount there. The other thing that I found intriguing is when we posted our column on Wednesday, Lawler was a -200 favorite and Woodley was a +170 favorite. But looking at the odds now, the money is shifting back towards Woodley a little bit. Robbie Lawler looking about -145, -150 across the board. Tyrone Woodley +125. It's going to be a good fight, I think. Of course, easily the best one on the card here. How do you kind of see this one playing out?
Well, we talked about this in the past here. It kind of seems like the UFC, whenever there are two title fights on a card, and I'm not talking about cards like UFC 200 or whatever it is they're going to do in New York in November. Your average UFC pay-per-view that has two title fights, it seems like the UFC feels that that will carry the card. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they don't have to put a lot of other big-name fighters on the card. But then the downside of that is you end up with a card like this where the second title fight gets canceled and now you have a mess. And you're right. This is by far the best fight on the card. It's really the only fight that I think will interest a casual fan, a fan who doesn't, know a lot about the sport and just, enjoys watching big events. I took Lawler in this fight, and this is a hard fight to break down because Robbie Lawler, and it's crazy to me at least when you think about it, Robbie Lawler went from a guy who was, more or less roster depth. He wasn't going anywhere, to a guy who is now one of the longest reigning champions in the company. Yeah. Which is, to me, it's mind-boggling how much better this guy has got. His last three fights, he's defeated Carlos Condit, Rory McDonald, and Johnny Hendricks. I mean, that's, three of the best in the world
mm-hmm. at good this as weight class.
Yeah, but the reason I pick Lawler is mostly because I think the key here is all of those fights, Robbie Lawler has gotten his butt whipped. He has taken, the McDonald fight especially.
Yeah, one of the better fights of all time, that one with McDonald at UFC 189, which proved to be one of the best cards in recent memory.
But Robbie Lawler has proven that he can get his butt whipped and take a pounding and still figure out a way to win.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Condit and the Hendricks fight were both split decisions, and I thought Lawler won both of them. They were close, but I thought he won both of them. And you can make an argument that in both – and the McDonald fight too, which he – you know, he's topped McDonald in the fifth. But in all those fights, Robbie knew that the fights were close, and he had to turn it on late. It mm-hmm. seems like if you start hitting him and it turns into a bloody mess, that he turns into a better fighter, which for a guy who is 34 years old and has been around as long as he is to me, is quite remarkable.
Yes. Now, Lawler and Woodley, both 34 years old, so you've got a little bit of equality there. And I just worry a little bit about the wear and tear of Lawler. I mean, we got Woodley here, who he hasn't fought since January 31st, 2015. That was a split decision win over Kelvin Gastelum. So the ring rust could be a factor here for Woodley. But I also think at 34, Woodley's going to go for broke. This is his first title shot in the UFC, if you don't count any of the Strikeforce stuff. Could very well be his only title shot at 34 years old. You got to imagine he's going to go for broke in the first couple rounds, right?
You would think so. You know, I've said, as I wrote, I think Tyron Woodley has more vicious one-punch knockout power than Robbie Lawler does.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Lawler is a better striker in the sense that he puts combinations together better. He moves better on the feet. He's a crisper striker, I guess, is the easiest way to say it. So I think Woodley's best chance of winning this fight is probably to wrestler. You know, that is his background. He has a background in wrestling, former Division I wrestler. But, you know, Robbie Lawler's takedown defense has always been pretty underrated. It's the strength of his game. You don't see it a lot because Robbie, you know, usually prefers to stand and trade. So we rarely see Lawler having to use his takedown defense. But his takedown defense for his UFC career is, you know, about 67%, which is good. But, not elite, but, you know, above average. And Robbie just relies on throwing so many combinations and so much on the feet that he keeps you honest in the sense that he won't let you go for a takedown because you're constantly worried that he's going to just pound you on the feet.
Mm-hmm. So without a doubt, Lawler's your pick in this one?
Yeah, I he is. And this is a close fight, and it's – in a day and age where we're seeing more title fights that seem lopsided in the sense that you have a clear-cut winner, this isn't one of those, but I think Lawler certainly deserves to be the favorite. And again, though, these are two guys who, while they both have a ton of power, have both been involved in long fights that have gone to a decision. So I expect it to be a good, entertaining fight, but – it makes for a tough DraftKings play for both of them because, when you put someone in your DraftKings lineup, you're hoping for a quick finish. That's how you're making your money. So,
mm-hmm.
in that sense, I think both these guys are a little risky, but I think Lawler's going to win.
Yes. Now, this might be one. I think it's the only one on the main card. But we're going to disagree a little bit. I do see where you're coming from with Lawler, and I think if the fight gets into the third round and beyond, Lawler does win. He'll find a way to win a decision, outlast Woodley, or just finish him late once Woodley presumably gasses out. I think I'm going to give the edge to Woodley in this one. I know he's got the layoff, but I just look at Lawler and all those wars that he's been in at 34. I feel like he might be a little bit of an older 34 than Woodley after, four fights in a row that have gone five rounds. I think, like I said, I think Woodley's going to go for broke, and I think I'm going to pick him in this fight. I've struggled with this all week. I can understand seeing Lawler win the fight. I absolutely wouldn't be surprised by that. But I like your DraftKings point that you mentioned. If you're going to pick this fight and put one of these in your DraftKings lineup, it almost has to be Woodley because that's where the finish is going to be, and he's only 9,000, so that gives you a little bit of freedom to do with the rest of your lineup. The odds to finish of this one are -215, which I thought was a little bit high considering Lawler's recent decisions and tendencies to get in wars. But I think we're going to differ on this one. I'm going to lean towards Woodley a little bit just because it'll help me with the DraftKings lineup, and I do like the underdog. Now, the problem is you're not going to be able to find him at +170 anymore because the money's moved his way a little bit. So I don't feel the greatest about it, but I think I'm going to put my head in for Woodley in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is – and again, we should point out, DraftKings post their salaries, the salaries don't change. Those are set. But as you just mentioned, you know, Vegas odds do change, you know, based on the money that's coming in. So, you know, if you're the type of person who, you know, puts money down on fights as opposed to DraftKings, if you are looking at odds and, you know, you see a line that you like, get in on that, because it could easily change depending on where the money comes in moving forward.
Yeah, you don't see this very often, but I think in this is a rare situation where Lawler might be the better money line bet, but Woodley is the better DraftKings play. I think that's how I'd pin that one down. But let's move on to the co-main event here. Again, supposed to be Mighty Mouse Johnson against Wilson Reese. That got scrapped. Reese is still on the card later, further down here. But it's been replaced with a women's strawweight matchup here between Rose Namajunas and Karolina Kowalkiewicz, if I said that right here. Namajunas, 10,800. Karolina, 8,600. So near bottom barrel pricing. These odds haven't changed a ton. Namajunas, a heavy favorite here, minus 230. Karolina, plus 190 here. The odds to finish on this one are plus 155. It's one of the two fights on the main card here with where a finish is actually not expected, according to Vegas here. You said in your DraftKings column, John, that you're probably staying away from this fight on DraftKings here. Do you want to explain that reasoning?
Yeah, and it's pretty much for the main reason for what you just said. This, to me, at least lines up as a fight that could very easily go the distance. It strikes me as that kind of fight. For her entire career, I have underestimated and not given Rose Namajunas the credit that she deserves. It has gotten to the point where I think it's pretty obvious that she is the third best welterweight in the world. Flyweight, strawweight, women's strawweight in the world.
Mm-hmm. No flyweight division yet. Maybe getting there. I know fighters are clamoring for it.
It's not there yet. But, you know, I would not pick Rose over champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I would not pick Rose over former number one contender Claudia Gadea. I wouldn't pick her over either of them. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think she's the third best strawweight in the world. And her strength is her wrestling and submission game. She looks, obviously all strawweights are small, but Rose looks very tiny. She looks very I don't know if frail is the right word, but she's very lean, let's put it that way. And she's very strong. If she gets her arms wrapped around you, she is going to drag you to the mat. And as I wrote in my column, my guess is that if she wins this fight, she is going to fight for a title at some point within the next 12 months. Because Claudia Gadea, who I think is better than Rose, has already fought Joanna twice and lost twice. So they can't do that again. So they got to find someone else. And this is another fight that this is a really good fight, but for the co-main event of a pay-per-view, this is not the kind of fight that is going to excite the average fan.
This might be a good co-main for like a fight night card or a Fox card, but probably not for a pay-per-view.
I think that's a good way to sum it up. Karolina has not been in the UFC for very long. She only has two fights. December, she beat Randa Markos, who was good. Randa Markos is good, although she's struggling right now. And in May, she beat Heather Jo Clark, who is pretty much nothing but roster depth. So it's safe to say that this is going to be by far the biggest test of her career. Karolina is, she's a striker. Her strength is her Muay Thai. So if Rose is dumb enough to stand there and get involved in a 15-minute kickboxing match, I suppose she has a chance. But I would be really surprised if Rose went that route. I expect constant pressure. Rose never gets tired. So you know she's just going to be on Karolina from the opening bell. So I think this is a pretty clear-cut decision as far as who I like to win. But like you said, I'm not crazy about this fight from a DraftKings perspective, because as both the Vegas odds, you know, that prop bet you just mentioned, this looks to me like a fight that has the distance written all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Rose has been rolling of late. She's got momentum on her side. Much better resume with three straight wins over Angela Hill, Paige VanZant, and Tessa Torres most recently. I think we can both agree that she'll be keeping that momentum rolling and fighting Joanna for a title in late 2016, early 2017. So I think that's on the table here. But like, I think we're agreeing on this too. One, to stay away from on DraftKings, because a third round decision where Namajunas is wrestling a lot at 10,800, there's just not a lot of value to be had here. But let's move on here to the welterweight bout. We've got Matt Brown at 10,900 going up against Jake Ellenberger at 8,500. Brown a pretty heavy Vegas favorite at -325, Ellenberger +265. So if you think Ellenberger can squeak one out here, there's some money to be made here. But I'm not necessarily feeling that from the sense I got from you. I mean, Brown's a little bit of an older fighter. We're expecting a finish here because Vegas has it at -290 here. You want to break this one down for us, John?
You know, this I can sum this up really simply. Matt Brown had a really nice run, you know, where I believe he won seven fights in a row. But as soon as Matt Brown started facing better competition, everything went downhill. Mm-hmm. Brown hits hard. He has power. He's a well-conditioned athlete, and he's tough as anyone in the company. But he's limited athletically. He's limited in what he can do against better fighters. So as I'm busy saying what Brown can't do, the positive for Brown is he's facing a guy in Jake Ellenberger on Saturday who I think is done. Done in the sense that I think he's going to lose this fight. I think he's going to be released. That's how done I think Jake Ellenberger is. Ellenberger has been so bad of late that even at that discount price, there is no way in a million years that I think you can ever use him at all in any lineup. He's 1-5 in his last six fights. Now, granted, the losses have come against McDonald, Lawler, Kelvin Gastelum, Stephen Thompson, and Tarek Saffiedine. So all five losses are against guys who right now you would have to say are all top 10 welterweights, mm-hmm. which begs the question, if you need a win so badly, I know these guys are competitors and like to fight the best guys put in front of him. But and part of this is on Joe Silva, UFC matchmaker, too. Why are you putting a guy who is, you know, clearly on the downside of his career against all these top guys? You know, that shouldn't be happening. So Ellenberger has been so terrible lately that until he shows me something, I don't think you can use him. I don't think you can put him in and pray for an upset. I would 100,000,000% stay away from him until he shows me something else. And if he loses this fight, I think he's going to be released, at which point, obviously, he's not going to show us anything because he's not going to be on the roster anymore.
Yeah, maybe he'll be showing us something for Bellator or something along those lines.
I think this is pretty clear-cut. Mm-hmm. I would not, and as I said before, I would not be picking Matt Brown against – I'm not even sure Matt Brown is a top 10 welterweight anymore himself, but he – certainly appears to have way more left in the tank than Ellenberger does at this point.
Mm-hmm. Ellenberger's back is once again against the wall, and who knows what the future lies for him. But I think this is another one that we can both agree on. Matt Brown, probably the lock of the night when it comes to it. He's one of the biggest favorites, definitely the biggest favorite on the main card there. So I think we're both rolling with Matt Brown in this fight, and with good reason based on the history that we've had here. But moving forward here, we got a bantamweight matchup here between Francisco Rivera and Eric Perez. This one, a virtual tie in terms of DraftKings salaries. We got $9,700 for both of these fighters here. The Vegas odds here's got Rivera at a slight underdog, +105, Perez -125. The odds to finish on this, -130. Perez, kind of an up-and-comer, I guess you could say. He's only 26. Rivera is 34. So, it projects to be a close fight. Is it close enough that you would stay away from it on DraftKings, or is there a way you can find an edge in this bout?
I think you can find an edge because I think Perez is a better fighter than Rivera, especially, as you said, at this point in their careers. Rivera is the kind of guy who... he's a lot like Diego Sanchez in the sense that every single fight he's in is entertaining because all he does is just stand and bang with his opponents. Mm-hmm. The problem is four out of the last five times he's done it, he's lost. So, you know, it's great to be entertaining and, you know, to try and please the fans, but at some point you have to win fights. And he's 1-4 in his last five fights, and Rivera is another guy whose job could be on the line in this fight.
Yeah, and it's not like he had the greatest resume as far as the 11 wins that he collected before that. So, I mean, and the losses have been to names like Uriah Faber, John Lineker, Brad Pickett here. I do like the tendency to stand and bang because I think he might have more DraftKings potential if he lands a lucky shot. But overall, this might be one I'll try to stay away from on DraftKings because, I mean, do you think Perez does have a good chance to get an early finish here? Can he hit value at 9,700?
You know, I put it this way. I certainly think Perez is going to win the fight. I think Rivera is a better DraftKings play because any Rivera win would almost certainly come early because he just throws so much that, you know, you would think if he's going to win, it should be via some kind of early stoppage. So from a DraftKings perspective, I actually think Rivera might be the better play. Mm-hmm. But if you start getting towards a Vegas odds perspective and a money line perspective, I think Perez is going to win.
Yeah, right on here. I don't know if I've quite seen enough of Rivera of late to be able to pick him to win. So I think we're right exactly in agreement here. I'm still torn. I'm going to post our staff picks article a little bit later on, and it'll have the official ones. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up leaning towards Perez in this one here. But let's check the opening bout of the pay-per-view card here. We've got a flyweight matchup between Ian McCall against essentially an up-and-comer in Justin Scoggins here. You can find McCall at a pretty cheap price at $9,000. Scoggins at $10,400 here. The Vegas odds, looking like McCall, a pretty big underdog, plus 205, Scoggins minus 245. This is the other fight on the main card where the odds to finish are just plus 165, potentially limiting your potential from a DraftKings standpoint. Like I said, it's the story of kind of a veteran, McCall's 34 years old, against a relatively newcomer but good, solid prospect in Scoggins at 24 years old. Can you see an upset happening here? Do we have Ian McCall kind of retaining where he's at right now, or is he just another stepping stone for Scoggins as he hopefully gets a quest at Mighty Mouse?
No, you know, this is my upset pick. You know, I'm taking McCall on this fight, and every DraftKings lineup you put together, you have to find some upset mm-hmm. somewhere, and this is one of my big one. Ian McCall is a perennially underrated flyweight. He's 32 years old, so certainly not as young as Scoggins. But Ian McCall's last six fights, he's 2-3-1. The draw came against Mighty Mouse Johnson. So anybody who could take Mighty Mouse to a draw, that should tell you right. Mighty Mouse, who I think we both agree right now, you'd have to say is by far the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. So anybody who could take Mighty Mouse to a draw, he fought Mighty Mouse again, and although he lost, it went the distance. So he's fought Mighty Mouse twice, once to a draw, second time he took him to the distance. Ian McCall is just a good all-around fighter. Now the thing I'm concerned about is McCall hasn't fought since January 2015. Mm-hmm. So
very similar. I think that was the same event actually as Tyrone Woodley's last event, January 2015.
Yes, it was. And both of them, both McCall and Woodley, had fights later in 2015 they were supposed to be involved in, mm-hmm. and were canceled for McCall's because he was injured, Woodley's because Johnny Hendricks couldn't safely cut the weight to get to the welterweight limit. Mm-hmm. So that's my biggest concern here about McCall is that it's been a long time since he fought. And, you know, regardless of what Dominic Cruz says, Octagon rust is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Dominic, in case you don't know, Dominic Cruz has stated in the past that he's a perfect guy to say this because he spent so long on the sidelines with all his injuries. Dominic Cruz has stated that Octagon rust is just a mental thing and it doesn't exist. And, I think we all pretty much agree that's not true. There is some level to not being in there. You could spar all you want. It's not the same as fighting an opponent. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little worried about, McCall not being out there for a while. But, he's facing Scoggins, who, 24 years old, developing. But again, a guy who during his UFC career has been inconsistent, 4-2. So obviously a good record. His last fight against Ray Borg in February was his best performance. Ray Borg is a very, very good flyweight prospect. Scoggins won that fight easily via decision. But again, I think this is one of those fights where you have to look at the numbers. Justin Scoggins averages nearly 4.5 takedowns a fight. That is what his game is based on. He's a wrestler. Ian McCall's takedown defense throughout his UFC career is nearly 89%, which is an insanely high number. So, you know, this is, you have, like I said earlier, you have to pick an upset. You have to pick an upset somewhere. And this is one where I think McCall is getting overlooked because he hasn't fought in so long. And I think his, McCall's takedown defense, which is, you know, going to be really key against the guy in Scoggins who has a wrestling background. McCall's takedown defense throughout his UFC career has been terrific. So, I think McCall, I like McCall in this fight. I think this is one of those fights where you can certainly make a good, even if you don't think McCall is going to win, I certainly think he's the better value. I happen to, you know, as I said, I think he's going to win outright, but, I think you must agree that he's at least, at the very least, a quality value play.
Yeah, I could very much see him as a value play. I think if picking the fight straight up, I'm going to go with the younger Scoggins, but I just don't like the way that I think he's going to win. I think he'll try to get takedowns and ride out a decision. And like we've talked about it the whole show, that's not very conducive to DraftKings. So you're going to go with McCall. I'm going to roll Scoggins on this one here. You can check out our staff pick article on the website later today here. But this brings us to the next topic here, trying to pick a DraftKings value play of the day. You want to try to find some value because, like you said, you can't just pick all favorites. You pick five fighters with a $50,000 budget, so that's $10,000 a fighter. And like going to the example, if you want to take Robbie Lawler, he's 10-6. If you want to take Matt Brown, he's $10,900. So you take those big favorites. You've got to pick one, sometimes two, and even sometimes three upsets, depending on the big favorites here. So is McCall your big value play that you're going to be using in your lineups, or is there any other values that you see on here?
You know, McCall is my big value play from the sense that I think he's the underdog who I think has the best chance of pulling the upset. Now, obviously, I get asked a lot who I think my value plays are for each individual event, and this is going to sound strange, but my other value play for this card is a guy who's a favorite, which doesn't happen often. And that's Nikita Krylov, who's going to fight Ed Herman. Krylov is in at 10,200. Herman is in at 9,200. When I saw these odds, actually both the odds and the DraftKings salaries, I thought they were both misprints. Nikita Krylov, for those of you who don't know, started his UFC career at heavyweight. He was undersized at heavyweight. He had a hard time. He's been fighting at light heavyweight ever since. He's won four fights in a row, three of them via submission, one of them via knockout. The guy has looked like an absolute savage. Mm-hmm. And he's taking on a guy in Ed Herman who defeated Tim Boetsch in his last fight. But, you know, other than that, has been more or less roster depth for his entire career. I was very, very, very surprised that both the odds and the DraftKings salaries in this fight were this close. I would have guessed that Krylov would have been closer to, you know, 10,700, 10,800 mm-hmm. than the 10,200 that he's at. And as far as the Vegas odds go, Krylov was minus 155. I would have thought he would have been more at minus 230, minus 240, somewhere in that area. So
looking at it now, I mean, that's actually what he's moved to. I think the money's corrected itself a little bit in Vegas because I'm seeing minus 225, minus 230 across the board. I do see one outlier at minus 190 and another minus 205. But overall, the money's moving back towards Krylov as it should be.
Yeah, like we said earlier, while the money might move, the DraftKings salaries aren't moving.
Mm-hmm. One person enters a contest, there's no more changing of salaries, so those are locked in.
Yep, his DraftKings salary is going to be $10,200,
mm-hmm.
That seems stunningly low to me, to the point where I thought it was a misprint. But you know, when you take into account the Vegas odds, which is what DraftKings kind of goes, you know, takes into account when they put these salaries together.
Yeah, it's that and fantasy points per game. You know, they kind of put that as their next to it when you're putting together a lineup here. And so fighters that have had a stretch of knockouts might have a little bit higher salary than someone who is winning by decision consistently.
So, like I said, Krylov has won 4 fights in a row. They've all been, you know, via either first or second round stoppages. So that, you know, what else can you ask for when you're trying to put together a DraftKings lineup? So yeah, it's not often that, you know, one of my great value plays is a guy who's already favored, but that's the case in this one. I like Krylov in a big, big way in this fight.
Exactly. See, this leads us perfectly into the next question I was going to ask you, and that's the undercard fight worth tuning in for, because this Krylov fight isn't on the main card, and this was going to be my pick for the undercard fight worth tuning in for, mainly for two reasons here. The odds to finish are minus 350. That's by far the biggest on the card here, so big favorite to finish here. And of course, Krylov never once in his entire professional fighting career, he's fought 24 times, never once has he let it get to a decision here. So that's my pick for the fight of the night. And I agree with you as far as the salary being a bit too low there. I think that's definitely, you're going to see super high ownership due to that fact, but it's also something you almost need to put him in your lineup because it doesn't really set you back too much. But aside from that prelim fight, is there any other prelim fight that really jumps out at you?
I mean, I'm looking forward to the Ross Pearson Jorge Masvidal fight simply because two guys who are, you know, both veterans of the sport, but also two guys who really just enjoy standing and getting in there and just banging with their opponents. Mm-hmm. Both Pearson especially, but both Pearson and Masvidal, two guys who just love to mix and trade. So I think from, and to be honest, on this card, this is probably also the undercard fight that are the two biggest names to, you know, casual MMA fans. Both Pearson and Masvidal are fairly well-known fighters. So I think that will help draw eyeballs to this fight, but as it should, because I think this is, just from not looking at it from a DraftKings perspective or an odds perspective, I think this is just the undercard fight that is probably has the best chance of being the most entertaining.
Yeah, so I think we can both agree it's definitely going to be worth our time to tune in a little bit early for the prelims, at least catching the last two here on Saturday night from Atlanta. First time a pay-per-view has been on the East Coast in quite some time, so absolutely worth tuning into for quite a while on Saturday. Well, that'll do it for the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, UFC 201, Saturday in Atlanta, Georgia. For John Littering, I am Jake Litarski. One last time, please rate and review the pod if you can. Give John a follow on Twitter at John Littering. You can give me a follow at JakeSki52. We'll be back with you prior to the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz rematch at UFC 202 on August 20th. Thanks for joining me, John, and take care.
All right, looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.